Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends. How are you?
Spoiler, I'm good.
Good. Well, as long as we've broken the spoiled seal, let's spoil seal. I think his music is great.
Yeah. I think it's trite and overwritten. Oh. We decide tonight on After Things.
Trying to remember, where was the thing where Seal got attacked by wolves?
Oh, that was the Lonely Island Bieber mockumentary.
Oh, yeah.
The wolves get released, but he's not afraid to fight them because he's like, how do you think I got these scars?
Oh,
yeah. So we're going to talk about Thor Ragnarok, and we're going to just jump right in and say spoiler, 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 spoiler. Go see this movie. Why are you listening to our dumb podcast about Thor Ragnarok instead of seeing Thor Ragnarok?
I watched it twice over the weekend.
I'm jealous. Can't wait to watch it twice.
I think I might go see it after this, to be honest with you, because first impression, I walked into the theater really, really liking it, but I felt a little slightly colder than I thought I was going to, just because the one thing that I love the most about Taika Waititi movies is that he does such a great job of putting the characters before the gags. He's obviously a very talented comedic director and writer. But it's always, I know these people, and therefore it's funnier when they get into these situations. And that's certainly the case in What We Do in Shadows and the work he did on Flight of the Conchords and certainly Hunt for the Wilder People. And although undeniably this is a hilarious movie, I felt a little cold on the fact that I didn't know how much more I knew about the characters and some of the simplicity of the story, and then like the next day, I just kept remembering jokes and just like laughing to myself at how funny the jokes were. And now, 48 hours later, I'm like, this is a brilliant movie. I just need to see it again.
Yeah, you're just wrong on the first take. I'm sorry.
I called and I you know how little Andrew Main likes spoiler talk before he's seen a thing, but he was kind enough to let me get it off my chest. That the big bad guy, the Grand Master, pretty much the exact character of Bryce from Journey Quest.
From Journey Quest.
yeah.
Like, right down to him DJing for everyone. and even his mannerisms, I could totally see just Bryce. And watching it a second time, realizing it, just made it so much better.
Oh, wow. I didn't put that together. That's amazing. It is. It's brilliant.
Where do you guys want to begin on this one?
So let's start with the criticisms.
Yeah.
Is it too campy? Has Marvel Universe just become too Howard the Duck? Has it just become too campy?
I would say that much like the Marvel landscape in the comic books always has been, there are pockets of over-the-top camp, and there are pockets of visceral, really believable other areas. And for the I would say that I'd never thought the Thor franchise could work as a movies. And they have, with the first two movies, done a good enough job of couching, you know, yeah, we say gods, they're celestial, alien, very powerful beings that have mannerisms that are very human-like, and they're interested in the human world and all that stuff. They've already earned the credibility, but also everything's familiar enough that if you're going to have so out there set piece, out there, a storyline, so out there, everything. It's like, I'm really glad they just owned it and just like, yeah, let's also have everybody a little bit self-aware. Like, look, you face death so many times, you pretty much know you're invulnerable. I appreciated it from all the characters.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's an element in the beginning of that movie when you begin with a literal, I bet you're wondering how I got here. You then immediately go into a fight scene that Thor takes about as seriously as anybody who's watched the previous 18 Marvel movies should take a fight scene in the first 5 minutes. And then you go back to Asgard where Odin is reacting in this very weird, over the top, silly way. There's this very silly play happening with all these crazy cameos. And like, you're just like, what is this movie? Like, what this is just, it doesn't even feel like it connects to the other films or what we've seen of Thor beforehand. Yeah. And then I think it kind of, with the reveal of Loki, you kind of like, oh, okay. This is its own thing.
That's interesting because maybe I got a different experience because at the Alamo Drafthouse, they did a really good 4 or 5 minute chunks of the previously on Thors. That was all the story, the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth one. So it was very fresh in my mind that the last Thor movie ended with Odin being impersonated by Loki. So for me, there was no disconnect. There was no wondering what was going on. Like the moment I saw him popping grapes in his mouth, you know, I knew it was Loki, and I knew that he was watching a play for his own bemusement. And so I was instantly on board with all that.
Yeah. No. I mean, I saw it at a draft house. I saw the same thing. I think it's just for a lot of people that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can't jump in there.
Can we talk about the players in that play though?
Yeah, and to be clear, like the first Guardians of the Galaxy I loved, and I love to see the fun side of the Marvel. And the way I describe, like, I don't have a problem with humor. If a friend of mine was telling me a story and about some funny thing that happened or the funny night or whatever, and I believed, and it was a believable thing, like, yeah, that was crazy. And that was like how I felt about Guardians. That's how I felt about this. Like, yeah, it's a lot of humor, but it's not like, I don't like Family Guy for a lot of reasons. I'm in admiration of Seth MacFarlane, but that show, it's like they will just cut to a non sequitur joke that has nothing to do with it. And my issue with sometimes some of the Simpsons stuff, I say this as a guy who's supposed to go to a live read on Thursday, by the way, table read. Sometimes when they go into that absurdist sort of realm, they break that wall too much. I'm like, it loses its grounding. But I always felt these characters were grounded, and I always felt like they were real in the Marvel universe. And this is a universe where we accept Asgardians. And I think that the first Thor movie doesn't get enough credit for the fact that it had to be there to establish the whole cosmic aspect to everything. Give us our first aliens, give us all of these things. And it did in a very good way.
Yeah, I agree. Specifically I loved finding out who was playing those characters in the play.
Andrew had to tell me. I didn't pick up on any of it. Like, I think like they were lingering on the faces long enough that I'm like, oh, these are probably somebody, but maybe it was the few drinks I had before the show, but I didn't pick up on.
I didn't either. And it wasn't Odin is played by Sam Neill from Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Luke Hemsworth plays Thor. That works. And was he credited here playing Loki?
Not credited. Not officially credited in the credits.
Oh, who is Matt it? Damon.
apparently in an interview with Kevin Feige, they're like, so how'd you line all that up? And he's like, well, Taika Waititi was like, all right, I'm going to get Sam Neill for Odin. And we thought it was really funny to have another Hemsworth play Thor. So he was the Hemsworth we got. And then the main Hemsworth was like, oh, why don't I just call my mate Matt? They're like, who? Like, Matt Damon. He's like, yeah, sure. Call Matt Damon. See if he wants to be Loki. And sure enough, he flew down from like New York so he could do it.
And it was great. It's just that, you know, Matt Damon's one of these people that, you know, because he plays a variety of roles, his weight fluctuates, right?
Yeah.
You know, he can go from Jason Bourne and be just lean and mean to Suburbicon and this. So this was probably Suburbicon Matt Damon. So unrecognizable. I'm looking at these characters. I'm like, all right, that's Sam Neill. That's awesome because he was in, you know, Hunt for the Wilder People. We got what's her name? I'm going to pull her name up again because she was amazing. Rachel House, who was playing, you know, the Grandmaster's, you know, henchwoman. You know, she was awesome. But for this, I'm like, Thor, like, that's supposed to be somebody. Who is that? And like, oh, it's, you know, that we jokingly call him Bobo Hemsworth from Westworld. And then, like, I'm looking at Loki going, like, that's got to be somebody. It's got to be somebody. And then afterwards, I had to find out it was Matt. I'm like, oh!
Yeah, that's great. And I think that did a good job of kind of setting the tone where, you know, they established, like, there's trouble. And you know what? Even though in that opening scene, they were directly setting up the MacGuffin that was going to save the day at the end, it didn't feel heavy-handed like that. And I think the jokiness, you know, that little timing bit with the spinning around on the chain and all that was pretty good camouflage. So that was very satisfying when you got that. Yeah, you know what? Asgard is the people. Screw it. Let's let them destroy the whole thing. Bye.
Yeah. I like that opening scene, too, because, like, I think that, like, Thor has grown. Thor's time around smartasses like Tony Stark and other people and Natasha, etc. I liked it because I say, okay, I'm watching, you know, the evolution of this character, you know, and that the idea of like, hold on, that he would do that to annoy the guy, you know, just that's, he's always been a braggart. He's always been full of himself. And that's, now he's got this new kind of Tony Stark sort of level way of like, oh, wait, hold on. So it is insane, and these otherworldly monsters have no idea how to deal with this sort of, you know, Earth man humor.
Yeah, well, and you know what else you figure out really quick is they've done a great job of having each section of the Marvel Universe have its own kind of aesthetic palette, such that it was so fun watching the movie a second time with the kids and the wife, because the very second you see the sparks flying in a circle, like Penny's eyes just lit up and a big grin, you know, came on her face, and she grabbed my arm. It was just like, Dr. Strange, it's Dr. Strange. And sure enough, it was.
That was the line. I just, the next morning, I just couldn't stop laughing at was the, so Earth has wizards now. And then he like breaks the artifact or whatever. just leave it. Just leave it. It's so funny. I mean, but you want to know what, so I was talking with Andrew about this earlier today, and something that kind of clicked for me in thinking about it is that obviously what we do in Shadows was such a statement for Taika Waititi as a movie, but really the more you think about this, this is his take on in the way that what we do in Shadows was like, okay, if you're a bunch of vampires living in the modern world, what does that mean? What are your conflicts? Like, what are the issues that you have to do? How can we humorously play against these tropes that you know? And this is really that for Asgardian immortals, right? Like, what do we know about Asgardian immortals? They're more powerful. So what if we take away their power? You know, that they rule over people. We're going to make one a slave. And now he has to beg, borrow, and steal with the Hulk to be like, yeah, we kind of need you to help me punch things. Normally, I don't have a problem with that, but, you know, I'm going to need it for this larger thing. It really is great. Or even like Loki as a character, the idea that like, okay, well, Asgard is this place that you have fought tooth and nail and shredded your reputation to rule. What if it didn't exist? Who are you now? You know, make these decisions. And that the further I got away from it, the more that kind of crystallized.
Speaking of which, now that you brought up the Hulk, watching it the second time, I just was obsessed with the question of what must it have been like in the alternate universe where nobody knew that Hulk was the Grandmaster's champion. Like, can you imagine what that moment would have been like in the theater to have that be a surprise? And I understand it's the devil's bargain. I mean, we all had that moment as fans when the trailer came out. And that's what got our butts into the seats. So I can't get too upset about it, but I just am fascinated by wondering that.
Yeah, I agree. It's that, but what I liked was there were surprises in this movie. There were delightful surprises in there, like the cameos and finding out who else there. They got that was nice. And then part of Tess Thompson's character was great.
Oh yeah,
she was just and you think about the challenge, I think that the problem, let's say the Avengers, is that Hawkeye feels like he belongs in a different franchise, and I would say Black Widow, we've yet to get really, best Black Widow was probably, in my opinion, Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I agree.
And because that we got her being herself, doing her thing, and not, oh, how wounded she is, and she's wounded, and she's this, where we just got her being very proactive, whatever, and she was a great contrast to Cap. But I thought for Tess Thompson's character, this be dropped in the middle of this, with it fit right in. It's great. It was just great. I love James Gunn to death. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, though, was a disappointment for me. It was a real disappointment for me. I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and I'm kind of at the end of it, I'm like, all right, I'll just check that off the list. I've not seen it since then. This was a movie I walked out of the theater and I couldn't wait to bring, friends to go see it.
I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy 2 okay. I liked it. I liked it a lot for what it was. But I think that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 suffers from the same thing that the Avengers franchise, and even you saw it in Civil War, just overcrowding. And by having fewer characters, because there's only two core Marvel heroes in any scene at any one time in this entire movie. And as a result, there's plenty of room to breathe, and I get excited about meeting new characters that I don't already have baggage, and I'm not waiting for them to wedge in their one trick or one liner.
I hear you. I guess that I will defend Civil War because everybody had a motive, and Guardians, you're watching Peter Quill literally for two thirds of the movie just go from room to room, waiting for things to unfold.
I think that probably to me is my biggest criticism with Guardians 2 is that there's a lot of we all laughed along as Red Letter Media talked about the shot reverse shot problem of the prequels, where it's just a bunch of people on couches talking, and there are a lot of people on couches talking in Guardians 2. They go to a place, they stay in a place. We obviously know that this is an evil place, and eventually we get where we wanted to, where we leave, right? And there is an element to Ragnarok where you realize early on, okay, we know you got to go back to Ragnarok and you got to defeat Hela. But I think the journey is a little bit more linear, and they are constantly working step by step to get there. It's not like the entire movie takes place in the slave pit with Thor talking to the rock kiwi.
Yeah.
Bryce says maybe Marvel can't make that decent second movies.
Winter Soldier
was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It's one of the best Marvel movies ever, in my opinion.
And listen, Civil War was a great second Avengers, so.
Yeah.
I see what you did.
The Avengers are still my least favorite Marvel movies.
Even the first one?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I was thinking about the first one today. Because
everybody was dumb. Everything that you're like, why did you put this? Why did you put this cube here and start do this? Oh, that fell apart. Why do you have Hulk on board the helicarrier? That's dumb. Everybody this, and then all these come to Jesus moments in that. It was very much a writer putting people in position to have things happen to them. So. I'm insane. And I love the humor here was organic and not a bunch of one-liners. That's. Not to disparage anybody who may have directed Avengers movies and the upcoming Justice League thing, their humor always comes from people saying funny things and not really funny situations. And I loved in Ragnarok, Banner is like, now is his moment, and she doesn't, Valkyrie doesn't know who he is. There's that funny familiarity. He's like, don't worry, I have this.
He just jumps off and clobbers himself.
Jumps off and you're thinking that like he's gonna midair transform into Hulk, you know, you're gonna get the Hulk, you know, with the Hulk instincts, but no, flat, crumpled onto the ground and just this broken, you know, ungainly, pathetic fail, you know, and you're like, oh my god, that's the best part, because you know what's supposed to happen, like, oh, I mean, he's gonna Hulk out, but that moment of just. Nobody gets to be perfect in their moment. You know, the introduction of Valkyrie, she throws off the bottle. She starts to swagger down the stand. She falls over, you know. Thor trying to be impressive in front of Doctor Strange. It is just, I just loved it. Well,
and
like,
I think
human.
That's one of the things that really works on this is I equally would be interested to know if it's a good movie if you've never heard of any of these characters or seen any of the previous incarnations of any of it. I wonder if it just looks like a silly slapstick movie or let's say you didn't even know that Banner transforms into Thor or Thor into the Hulk or anything. I don't know.
Find the one person that's missed out over the last, you know, decade of these movies.
That would also be interested in seeing...
O.J. Simpson?
The third Thor movie.
Yeah, we'll get O.J. Simpson's take on all this.
I think that because even there's that running gag with the Avenger, with the Age of Ultron, like, you know, like, hey, big guy, like, sun's getting low, little thing that hey. Black Widow says to Hulk. And, like, obviously that's played for laughs throughout the movie, but then you see this kind of moment at the very end.
Yeah, I just love that. Where hey, big guy, sun's coming down. That almost is whacked. And then what I loved about Loki was everybody gets who Loki is. And that's what drove me nuts about Loki was like, he's like, he's deceiving everybody. But you're like, you guys are dumb that you're not kind of catching on to what Loki does. And I love this because now it's like Loki's kind of like the guy that says the same jokes over and over again. Everybody knows what he is now. And so Loki doesn't get to be menacing Loki now.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's the thing. I always think of the first day of school, the teacher could be a hard ass and then eventually relax and get funny and cool. The cool, funny teacher on day one never, ever commanded the respect of the class ever again. And I feel like this is the right progression for Loki because he was genuinely menacing in those early movies. And he really seemed dark in Avengers. And that's part of what was so satisfying about having him get ragdolled by the Hulk. Which, by the way,
but Doctor Strange, you know, like some point, like I was falling for 30 minutes.
Yeah. I love that moment in that scene when Loki comes after him. And he's just like, okay, bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Swipe left.
and a witch. Like what witch? Like why are you dressed like one? it was just such a.
Banner's performance was excellent as well. Befuddled, but like stepping out of the way of the story to just compete. Like, I've been the Hulk for 2 years. Like, he wasn't overly mad about it or upset or terrified. Just sort of like, what is happening? He's like the proxy to the person who walks in halfway through the movie. Like, what the hell is this? What is going on?
Like, F my life. You know, he's used, and then he's like, you know, like he's on another planet, never on another planet. It's like, it's a planet designed to get me, you know, make me anxious. You know, yeah. And then there's the big Hulk festival. They all got the Hulk stuff all around. You're like,
and meanwhile, Thor's just trying to sell water. It's like, hey, you were on one planet. Now you've been on two. And now we can make it three. Hey, this is great, right?
Yeah. I'm going to contrast and say, like, I hope Justice League is great. I really hope Justice League is great. I was very pessimistic about the possibility of Wonder Woman. I was very much like, see what happens there. And I walking even into the theater, because like people loved Rogue One and I was very disappointed of that. Even walking in a theater, even after Wonder Woman had all this praise, I'm like, man, I'll be the judge of this. And I loved it. And I thought it was, you know, it was greater than the things that may have irritated me. The characters are fantastic. It was really, really well done. So Justice League, I want that experience. I always want that experience with the DC movie.
I'll tell you
but what. Like when,
I did notice the poster for Justice League, something I did not think I was ever going to see. Very prominently right there in the center of the badass hero shot walking towards the screen was Wonder Woman, flanked by Batman and Superman.
they know what the crowd likes. But I was going to say that, like, in the trailer, I have, like, the issue with Justice League is, like, they have the thing where Aquaman jumps off to fight the flying thingamajigger or whatever and crashes through, like, 8 stories of the building and then just jumps out like nothing happened. And I'm like, that doesn't make me like you more. That makes me feel like I'm watching, you know, sock puppets that don't really live in a real world where I think about Banner, you know, Banner jumping out and falling, basically dying. I think about, you know, Thor, the clumsy Thor, or, you know, the Tessa Thompson's Valkyrie is just the stridently and just falling over flat out drunk. You know, these things, I love that. These are how, and I wonder, is DC making a mistake in their characters and trying to make them super, super powerful and super cross? Like some of the best moments in Wonder Woman where you're like, yeah, maybe she won't be able to make this one. You know, maybe this is going to be a little bit more.
Yeah.
And she overcomes and cheer for her.
I think that they certainly were in tune with the humanity of Wonder Woman to make that work. One of the many problems, I think, with Batman versus Superman is that it was more interested in making Batman a dark or sinister figure or somebody that has lost his way than the core interesting mechanics of a Batman versus Superman fight for me, which is this is a human and here's a god. How does the human deal with the god, right? And that's, you know, that final climactic battle in Dark Knight Returns is great in kind of giving us a mechanical understanding of this is how somebody who knows this person better than he knows himself can overcome for this power a difference. And
in the comic, I mean, yeah, in the comic, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, hey, yeah. I think that is a problem for the DC universe is I don't feel like they really know or have yet to fully express kind of who these characters are that we can latch on to, that we can say, okay, well, I like this resourceful element, or I like this brave element, or I like this sense of honor and duty in a way that Marvel has, where all these different characters, even if they're all smirking white guys who crack jokes, we know the difference between Thor and Doctor Strange and Loki and Doctor Strange. And all they have to do is stand next to each other. And we're like, oh, this is where the conflicts are going to come in.
One moment that I read a little bit interestingly. And first of all, I want to make it very, very clear. I am not talking about the artistic decision to do this. I understand that it's faithful to the source material. But just as they delayed the trailer for The Punisher, in that everything was a bit charged about, you know, assault weapon shooting, that redemptive moment with Scourge, where it's like, I was a bad guy, but now I'm a good guy, thanks to these two assault rifles that I got from Texas, shooting everywhere. And you could tell that in an alternate universe, that might have been a hooray clapping and cheering moment, but there was a very you could feel this wave of introspection happening in the audience instead. Did you guys have similar experiences in the theaters you saw it?
I saw that before the events took place.
Well, I mean, not before the I was still thinking of the Las Vegas shooting. So I also saw it before the Texas shooting.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I think it was you know, in that world, the crowd, not that I don't remember the crowd groaning or having any kind of muted reaction.
Well, I saw it in South Georgia.
So did they clap? They go nuts.
I mean, it was funny. The audience, it was funny as I was sitting next to a woman, a grandmother, like, you know, this grandmother woman who the moment, like, you know, we see Odin is possessed by Loki, or Loki is Odin there, she was like, this woman clearly had seen every Marvel film, you mm-hmm. know. And that was what was interesting to me, was that, like, I'm a fan, I'm sitting next to this grandmother who is, like, into every sort of moment, whatever. So I don't know if the guns made a difference or whatever, either way. I wasn't paying attention, so I don't know.
Okay, man, I guess do we have any picks?
Thor Ragnarok. I'm gonna go see it right after this. I'm bagging off for the rest of the day. Screw you, boss.
All right.
I'm gonna say I'm stoked about Black Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that we live in a world where we get Thor and then we get a Black Panther movie that looks like it's, you know, more, you know, serious.
Yeah, I don't know. I never read much of the Black Panther in the comics, and so and I've only seen what we've seen of his character in the, you know, the Marvel movies. I do like the idea that it's a hidden world. You know, the was El Dorado, basically, super wealthy hidden world.
Yeah, it could be like that, or, you know, one of the any lost city sort of thing. But yeah.
Yeah.
The trailers look great. I just like the look of it. I look, you know, I love that the Marvel Universe has these different corners and the films can feel different. I love that. You know, I love that we can have our goofball Guardians of the Galaxies in our Thor. We can get kind of more of a Winter Soldier political drama. And now we can get, you know, this, an Afrocentric, you know, storyline.
So I got a pick. It's a Netflix original. Check out Judah Friedlander's America is the Greatest Country in the United States. That was much funnier than I thought it was going to be. And unlike a lot of these Netflix specials where, you know, it's one big show that they you know, come in, this was all shot at the Comedy Cellar. And it was clearly he dressed up in the same outfit for what looked to be like maybe 2 months of showing up and doing sets. And as a result, you know, almost all of it is based on where are you from? And then just bags on the country and says why America's better. And then which sounds like it would wear thin, but it really does not. In fact, he's got a few pre-written jokes and some places he's hoping it's going to go on its own. But when they land, it is supernatural. And all of this done with this tongue-in-cheek, you know, better, we're the best, I'm the best, when I'm president, we're going to do this. And it's like he says he's going to legalize drugs, starting with heroin, but not pot. And it's like, you know, he's going to say, like, what did you grow up? Break the law, all right? And then, it's fun. It's very, very funny.
That's great. I've always been a fan of Judah Friedlander's work, so I'm pumped. And I love those themed comedy specials that aren't just like, oh, here's the stuff I've been working on. It's like, no, let's do something with a little bit more target to it.
Yeah, they do these really brief title cards in between segments, like, you know, hey, this is in January of 2016, this is in February of 2016, and then he does one bit, and then the title card just says, same question, different response. And it's as if, you know, you're now in a sideways universe where this is how it could have gone.
That's funny.
But it's good.
Down on what I picked in for weird things. Just check out Red Dwarf. If you like Rick and Morty, you like sci-fi, goofball, stuff like that, check that out.
Awesome.
Boom.
It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.